Welcome to Design for Voice podcast. Here's a quick highlight from today's episode.
We didn't waste any time on prototyping. We wrote the first version. We were very serious about it. We had a logo, we had the images, we had the description, and it was out very quickly. It gained us the ability to get a lot of data from real users.
I'm your host, Jeremy Wilkin, and today I am joined by two guests, Uri Shakid and Daniel Guersman. Uri is a Google developer expert for web technologies and the Google Assistant. He regularly writes about web and IoT-related technologies on his blog and speaks about them at conferences. Among his interests are virtual augmented reality, hardware hacking, neuroscience, building 3D printed robots in games and playing music, as well as salsa dancing. And Daniel is also a Google developer expert for the Google Assistant and product strategy. He's a Google certified sprint master and entrepreneur who firmly believes projects should be built using the right technology instead of technology driven by skill. He's part of the maker movement and an amateur photographer who travels the world with his family. In today's show, we talk about how they built the Spanish lesson action for the Google Assistant, some of the things they did as far as prototyping and design, as well as some of the restraints that they found when trying to develop a language learning application. Let's get to it. Welcome to Design for Voice. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about how to design and build a language learning application with Uri and Danielle. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thank you. Hey. All right, so I'm Uri from Israel, a Google developer expert for the Google Assistant. I also do a lot of web stuff and stuff with IoT, connected devices, 3D printers, brainwaves, whatever. A lot of fun stuff. And I also dance salsa.
I'm Daniel. I'm also a GDE for assistant and also a product strategy. I used to live near Uri in Israel. Now I'm traveling the world with my family, based now in Scotland. And I also like to create stuff. I'm a maker like Uri, and I think that's basic thing about me.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the show. And you've built a language learning application. It's interesting, you're traveling the world and you're in Scotland, but you're trying to learn Spanish. So in the process, you've built a Spanish learning application. Can you give us a little bit of a background and description of what that app is like?
So yes, basically, as you said, the purpose of the app is to teach you or any user Spanish to help you with developing your Spanish vocabulary. And we try to approach this by simply teaching you a few new words every day and then giving you an opportunity to practice it. That was our initial approach to designing this application, this action. And we, along the way, we learned a few things that may change in a future version of the application. We are still thinking about it. So this is a Spanish lesson.
So does the experience of the app change over time? When I've tried it, you have a bit of an onboarding experience. Can you give a little more detail about the different pieces of it?
Sure. So let's start with the persona of the app, like the experience that you get out of the box when you start the app. What does it feel like? We decided to try an approach which is not really conventional. Usually, every action has a single speaker, a single persona that you speak with when you talk to the app. And in our case, we tried to create an app with two different people that you speak to. These are your instructors. They're called Jack and Camila, and they help you throughout the process. So Jack is the English-speaking instructor, and Camila is the Spanish-speaking one. And actually, I have a small surprise for you. I invited Jack and Camila to the studio today, so they will also be joining us for the podcast. So here they are.
Hi, I'm Jack.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you for joining us. And Camila is also with us.
Hola, soy Camila.
Yes, she only speaks Spanish, as you can hear, and they are the instructors that help you learn Spanish when you use the app. And when you start the app, Jack starts by explaining to you the purpose of the app and how would you go about it. You first start by learning a few new words, and then you move on to practicing the words that you learn by translating sentences from English to Spanish with those words. And basically, the process more or less repeats itself every day when you come back, except for when you do it for the first time, there are more explanations. Jack works you throughout the process. And then when you come back, we assume that you already know what to expect from the app, and you already know Jack and Camilla, so they don't have to introduce themselves again.
Do either of you have any background in teaching language?
No, barely learning language.
That's a great question. I actually have some background in teaching Spanish to myself and to my life partner, Ariela, as well. She's actually the reason why we started all of this and why Jack and Camilla even exist.
Thank you, Ariela.
Gracias, Ariela.
It all started when we got a new Google Home device, and she asked, she started playing with it and doing all sorts of pretty different things, like tell me a joke, what sound does a cat make? And at some point, she just asked, hey, Google, please teach me Spanish. And the assistant says, I'm sorry, I can't help with that yet. And this gave me the idea of why won't we make the assistant able to teach people Spanish? And this is how it all started.
So I think it's really interesting that you're taking, which is really a challenging thing, learning a language. And you have a little bit of experience, or Daniel says he has none, in being a teacher. And there's, you know, obviously there are people and courses, classes, right, professors who dedicate their life's work to teaching language. So when you're thinking about the design for this process and example, there's a lot of things to draw on from around the world and how people teach and learn. But how did you begin thinking about this product and this application? And then ultimately focusing on what steps did you take to build something?
So actually that was exactly the first step that we did. After Uri came with the idea, we took like, I think a week just to investigate what's out there. What are the solutions you have for learning language, for learning Spanish? We tried different tools, from tools that you're using offline and tools you're using online, and apps, website. And what we did also in that process, we asked Ariela to test it with us. And we all the time examine her response to stuff, what she like, what she don't like. And we start to create this kind of list of things that we like and don't like. And since both of us coming from technology, I think there was some kind of reverse engineering here, because we look at solution, we look at the product out there and try to figure out why did it do it? Why did it choose this approach? Why did it choose these tools? What the game out of it? And then we start to create our own list of what we want to do, which actually lead us to the second step, which is to, define what's the essence of our product. Because we knew the technical problems that we're going to face. We knew that we're going to have a big problem of getting the user speaking Spanish. Because usually when you're teaching a language, you want the other person to speak the same language. But we couldn't do that with the technology right now, because right now on the system, you can choose only one language that you're speaking with the user, and you cannot flip between them. So we knew that we won't be able to do a full lessons like we want to do. So we decided that we're going to create an action that actually going to practice you on a vocabulary. And this is something that we actually can do with this technology today. We can present word and ask the user to translate it to us. So the action is actually speaking Spanish. Camila is doing that. And the user need to respond to that.
So back up just a moment. You started actually doing research with a user or potential user in helping inform that research, right?
Exactly.
I haven't heard many people do that. When they say research, they go off and read what other people have done, but they're not actually like testing these other options or solutions with their actual target audience. So I think that that makes a lot of sense and something that a lot of people don't do unless they have a larger project budget or something like this.
So from my experience as an entrepreneur, you don't want to design a solution for yourself because then you will be the only user, the only customer in this product. You do want to approach other people from early bases, and usually friends, family are the best candidate for that. So in all our project, I think we always use people that are not us and try for stage one to see how we can learn from them, how we can learn from their behavior, from their react, because later on, they're going to give us feedback about our product. And if we can understand that, you know, sometimes you're working with someone and you see that he's always complaining, even about good stuff. He likes to complain. It's okay. So you're taking that and say, okay, I'm getting good information here, but the volume is a little bit up. But it's okay. If I will turn down the volume, I can get the data. So later on, when you're using it on your own product, you actually know how to deal with that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we would prefer to start with a few people in the beginning and go with them till the end.
Right. And we also like the initial version, even before we released it to the Action Directory, was super simple. You didn't have all those learn and practice sessions. You would just have a sentence in English and you would have to translate it to Spanish. And I actually found a document where from by December 2017, where I documented the feedback I got for the very first version from Ariella, my life partner, when she first tried the app. And her first response was, "That's really cool. I didn't understand any word." So we really loved the first part of the feedback. She liked the experience, like she thought it was cool. But then I didn't understand any word, meaning she didn't get any value out of it. So she enjoyed the experience. She didn't get any value out of it. And then when we drilled down and when I tried to understand from her where it went wrong, she said, I don't know all of the words, and even if I say that I don't understand, the app won't accept that. And when it finally gives us and gives me the translations, it's too fast. So I like get a sentence, then I say I don't understand, then the app continues asking me over and over about the same sentence, and then eventually it gives me the translation, but I don't remember the original word, and the translation is also too fast, so I can't really learn this way. So I think that was really good feedback that helped us tune the speed where the speed that things are being said and the order that we present things in order to make sure that the users actually get value out of the action and not only a cool experience.
When you were doing all of that, were you always building something to prototype with, or did you do things manually where you pretended to be the agent and pretended to, I guess, role play to try out the experience a little bit?
I think it was a little bit of both. When I'm building action, I like to use Google Translate just so he can read me the other side, the other part, and this is how we building the conversation. Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit later. But since Uri is a very fast programmer, part of it was trying to test the technology as well. So he just wrote in a night, the first draft of it, so Ariella could start play with it and get a sense of it. And the second day, we already start to build version one.
When I think to add to that, when you design a voice experience, especially for the first time, there are some things that you don't really take into account until you actually get it running on the device. Even if you try to do the role play thing, you won't be able to get all the nuances of the real thing. So I think that in this case, it's good to do both, as Daniel said, especially because you want to get the feeling of what a final product would be like with the real text-to-speech and speech recognition engines.
That's, I think, is perhaps more true than many apps, just because of the fact that you're learning a language versus trying to turn on your lights or just accomplish a task, right? This is a, I need to understand what's going on, and I'm paying attention at a deeper level than normal when I just have a conversation with a friend or with an assistant. So learning an item, especially language, is already a very deep mental task, and getting that experience right makes a lot of sense. And actually also the differences between a human to human experience versus a human to somewhat synthetic through the assistant. You talked about determining the essence of the project. I wanted to ask one more question around that. You did a bunch of research and you had a lot of ideas on what you could do. How did you ultimately decide what to do?
I guess we were a little bit driven by technology. We really wanted to do a full class of Spanish, but we had a problem that I mentioned, that you cannot hear Spanish from the user, only English. So given that limitation, we try to get as much as we can from the technology. And as much as we can is actually practice vocabulary. So we decided that the essence is going to be for people who want to improve their vocabulary in Spanish. They won't be able to learn it from scratch. But if they already know the basic, and even if they don't, they will get out of this experience knowing more words and how to use it by a little bit. So that was actually the essence that we decided to do for this project.
That makes sense. And yeah, over time, as these platforms evolve, there might be more opportunities to do multilingual in the same turn or something like this. But obviously, in this case, it seems like you're very limited on what you can do. So it makes sense to narrow the scope and figure that out early rather than build a whole bunch of stuff and then find out, oh, no, we can't listen to Spanish and English at the same time. All right, so you went through a few steps. What were the next steps? So if I have my notes right, you were choosing your technologies in order to follow through with building your project, the essence. What followed that?
I think, Uri, you can explain more about it. You actually, Uri, published an article about all the details of choosing the technology we choose, and I really recommend it to reading.
Thanks. So basically, I think the essence of it would be, first of all, we knew we wanted to create an action for the assistant. So assistant was our goal, and app that teaches you vocabulary inside the assistant. And then we tried to find, to choose a stack of technology that would allow us to iterate quickly. And for me, the most important part was implementing continuous delivery with unit tests and everything automated, so we can push versions to production real quick. So basically, I think there were times when we pushed a new version every few minutes, changing some small nuances, fixing the issues. And then we also decided to go with Dialogflow, which helps us extract the intent of the user from whatever they say. For example, if a user doesn't know a sentence during the practice phase of the lesson, he could probably say, "I don't know," but he could also say, "I have no idea," or sometimes we even saw users asking stuff like, what is it or what does it mean? Instead of stating that they have no idea. So Dialogflow helps us classify all those different variations into a single I don't know intent. So basically, we have Dialogflow at the front connected with a backend that we created, and we wanted to be able to iterate real fast on both. So with Dialogflow, that's easy. You can just go to the UI and add new sentences, add new intents, and modify them as you go. And with our backend, it was important for us to be able to implement continuous delivery so we could do changes on the spot and have a good suite of tests. So when we deploy to production, existing users won't be affected by annoying bugs that we might introduce.
What stands out to me here is you're clearly going through the process of quick building and iterative testing as part of your design process, not just doing a bunch of design work and then building. And so the fact that you chose the technology stack so that you could push changes in minutes means that you can do your design super fast through the actual device. I'm using alpha and beta testing as well through the assistant. Are you doing that?
Not really, because when we started working on it, there was no alpha and beta test.
Okay, well, and things like that could exist for folks to use that type of feature. So I think it's really, it shows that you're choosing a certain path that the design and the implementation are a lot more married together very early on. And rapid iteration is sort of how you're doing the realization of that design process versus doing person-to-person type testing where you just test it out with somebody next to you.
Right. I think one of the reasons for that, one of the main drivers for that was we didn't really know what field we are going to play at. There were certain technologies that are still not as mature, and they have certain limitations, like combining languages, like the different type of like the speech recognition, and we weren't sure how good that would go. So we had to prototype really early in order to understand the limitations of the field we are playing in and build around those limitations, design around those limitations.
That makes a lot of sense. So when other people are building their actions, understanding the limitation of the platforms that they're working on is sometimes extremely important. I think in this case, it's extremely important. It might be less important for somebody who's, again, turning the lights on or some sort of basic action. Because I think
a joke.
Yeah, right. A lot of people that I've talked with don't think a lot about what the technology might send them as far as sending an incorrect transcription of what the user said because the user has an accent or the user is a child who doesn't speak very clearly yet. And some words just don't sound right. Parents understand their kids, but assistants might not. But it might still give you something meaningful that you don't understand or don't know how to handle. So knowing those limitations early obviously makes a big difference in final product quality. And quality in language learning, I think, is one of the best examples. So I definitely see how this makes a lot of sense and why it definitely suits you well and could suit others.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we talked about the technology. So that's step three. There's eight, right? So let's go through a couple more.
Step four was actually to create a persona. It was very fast that we decided that we're not going to use only one persona for this action. Both of us want to play a little bit. There were already action out there, and we want to try to push the limit a little bit more. And it was pretty much after a few drafts that we added Jack and Camila to the picture.
Thank you, Daniel.
You're welcome. You really helped there. And the approach here was to try to create some dynamic between them. So the conversation won't be boring. So it won't be like a lesson of the teacher say something, the user answering, the teacher say something, the student answering, and forth and backward. On the early stage, we had a lot of stuff that was going on between them. They had joke, they had inner joke between them. They had a lot of stuff. Later on, when we faced real users, we removed almost most of them. But it was very crucial for the creation of the persona, because for each one of us right now, we know exactly how they sound, how they look, what their character is. We started, I think, after we had a few dialogue, we sent them to a graphic designer and asked to get the picture of them, the images of them. So it was in front of us all the time, how Camila looks, how Jack looks, what's their height, what's their hair color, everything there. It's got very personal for us. And later on, when we asked our editor to write the text, the flow, the script between them, he also got the big picture. So we got the photos, he got all the description, what they like, what they not like, what the relationship between them, how long that they know each other. It was like writing a movie in a sense, when you have all the character there. So they are our favorite characters in this movie.
I like that you had an artist draw them, because a lot of times I've seen personas, people just go grab a clip art thing, right? They just find something that seems close and throw it up and that seems good enough. But you actually went out and got somebody to draw them based on your persona definition.
Yeah, I recommend Fiverr for that. It's cheap and fast. Okay. But you get a good results, right, Jack? You like your results?
Yeah, I really like it, especially my hair color.
Especially the glasses. So that was the creating of the persona. And once we knew exactly what's the dynamic between all the parts, the student, Jack and Camila, we could write better flows and actually start doing all the flow system that came after it. And in this case, we had our first big, huge mistakes, which I did. Since it wasn't my first action, I decided to go from the dialogue straight to the code without doing a map of all the flow between all the characters. It's a huge mistake. It cost us a lot of time and effort later on, because we realized in a much later stage that we wrote code that won't fit the changes that we need to do to the conversation. So learn from my mistake, get a good software that helps you draw, or a piece of paper that helps you draw something like a mind mapping. If you know the system, if not, just read about it. It's very helpful to build the flow over there after you have your first dialogue between all the characters.
Well, in your case, there are flows because it's an experience to teach, right? So there's steps that do need to follow. Some people are not very, they don't recommend flows, or you're doing like a flow chart type experience, because it kind of boxes you in to a certain way of experiencing the app. But sometimes that's the linear experience that you need to have. So it makes sense to have some of that, but either, however you do it, definitely I like paper best, because something about slowly drawing something on the page and keeping track of the things mentally clicks a lot better to me. But use whatever tool works for you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that eventually when you're going from dialogue to code, you have to go through flow, because code is based on flows. And it's very hard to create an action that have real field dialogue and convert it into code. So the processing of stopping and creating a flowchart, I know people don't like it, but just creating it and look at it, you don't have to follow it later on, but it makes sense, especially if you're a programmer And for us, you know, flowchart are this is just give me a flowchart and I will code it. No problem. But give me a dialogue, and then I will have to think about all the cases. And let's talk about, you know, there's also, it could be a very simple dialogue, even if you just, you know, ordering a pizza. It could get very complicated, because if someone would tell you, I want pizza with mushrooms, then he already give you all the information you need, and you know, you just need the address and you finish with it. But with someone could just start and say, okay, I want a pizza, and then you have to ask him, do you want top of this? Yeah, I want mushroom. And then you can go into a conversation, and what happened if he didn't say mushroom? He says, yeah, I want milk. Okay, we don't put milk on pizza. And what happened if you say, I want cat? Why? Because the cat was running in the background, he's just shouting on it. And the action actually got it. So there's a lot of hidden dialogues inside it. And flowchart can help you get all of that.
Or maybe he wants to change his mind after he said the toppings, or when you ask for the toppings, he orders a Coke. So there are so many ways it can go into unexpected paths. And on top of what Daniel said, having a flowchart really helps you later when you want to test your result, the action that you created, because you just go over every single edge of the flowchart and you just make sure that you cover it in your tests.
I know that I have yelled at my cat in the middle of a conversation with an assistant and things have gone very poorly. All of a sudden it starts playing like cat music or cat sounds instead of whatever I was actually asking it to do. So these things are real. It's not just oddball cases. It happens to people who build these experiences as well. So the personalities of Jack and Camila are fairly well defined. Did you also do some personas for users?
Well, yeah, first of all, we already have Ariella on our side. So we knew, we already have a real user on our side that help us to do that. We also use my lack of ability to learn language because I'm very slow in learning language. So we had to add that into the to the flow also and consider people who look at Ariella and Uri can get 6 words in a day. For me, two words in a day, it's like a very good day. I'm very slow in that. So we did change a lot of stuff. And right now, we are now talking about version 1, but version 2 has much more flexibility and I can actually decide how much words I want to learn each day. And if I'm a very good at language, I can ask for 6 words. And if I'm like me, I will go with only 1 or 2, and that will be fine for me. So yeah, we did change that through the time, and we did thought about the end user. I have 4 kids, so I use all of them. I'm not sure if use is illegal here, but they help me out. Okay, they help me out, and I don't get money for it. So, but it's really, really helped to think about it. In other apps, we also created this user persona that you have to create something like you're creating your own persona when you're writing on the paper. The user is Alex, is a 20 years old man living in Italy, and he's working in a farm, and he all he need to do is learn Spanish. So yeah.
We are kind of running up into time, so I want to maybe get through the rest of your flow a little more quickly, I think, and then cycle back to a couple quick things. So you've got the personas, and you've been building out and testing things. As you're building out these personas, and you started with the flow, what are some other things that are in your list?
So it was very important to us to go quickly out to the market. We didn't waste any time on prototyping. We wrote the first version. We were very serious about it. We had a logo, we had the images, we had the description, and it was out very quickly. And it gained us the ability to get a lot of data from real users. We love data. And we actually store everything, all the conversation, We have an inner website that can show us all the details that we need to learn from. And we're using a BigQuery to get, not BigQuery storing that, but we're using lots of graphs that we're creating just to understand how people react to changes, to what we did. We were playing with the words, with the vocabulary, we were playing with the dialogue. But being out there as fast as we could was very, very important for us. So that was the next steps for us to go out and collect the data.
As you're collecting the data, you're getting information and feedback. So I see, again, this approach of rapidly iterating. So obviously data helps with informing that. Can you talk a bit more about how you have learned from that data, what you have learned, what kinds of things you plan to do to address some of those, perhaps those issues you found?
Yeah, so I think one of the first things that we found is that Google Assistant's trying to help us by understanding the users. But sometimes it helps too much. So we had like a sentence that says, the friend is young, okay?
So that's the English one that you had to translate to Spanish.
Yeah, that's what the user needs to say. He needs to say that the answer is the friend is young. And we got the answer by the assistant, different is young. So the friend was translated to different. And we saw it in few users. So then we realized that sometimes we need to get the wrong answer, but we need to create some kind of a map that's saying if someone say different, he probably mean their friends. And in this particular case, it's the right answer.
Like we basically had to implement autocorrect, but in the context of our app, because we know what the user, what the right answer is. So if the user said something that sounds similar, we would like to automatically correct the user and put the right word instead. And on top of that, we looked at the data and we searched for mistakes that repeated the most common mistakes, and we added a small dictionary into our app that would translate those words.
Cool, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, that those types of tools are available on the Assistant and Alexa platforms, and you just have to know how to utilize that data. A lot of it's captured automatically. Some of it you can capture in addition on your own, but have you gotten any direct feedback from people as well? Not just through data, but qualitative type information, either through reviews or emails or some other form of communication?
Not so much. We tried to collect feedback from users who we were seeing returning repeatedly to the app. We have seen a few users that returned day after day for a month or so. So we tried to add a prompt that would ask them to fill some feedback form. I think we had one user who filled the feedback. Do you remember what he said, Danielle?
As far as I remember, she really liked the app, but she didn't had any new information to add to us. So we can build on it or change something. It was a nice feedback. That's it, which is good, but we wanted more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the shortcomings of this platform. Whereas in a standard app, you can just pop up a dialogue where the user can feel feedback. Here, you actually have to send them to their phones if they are not using the phone and open a web form to collect the feedback. And that makes the whole process of collecting feedback directly, not through just through data, much more complicated.
All right, so we're going to move to the final piece here called endpoint detection, where we wrap up a few things. So let's kind of review. What are some of the top takeaways that we've covered today?
First of all, get real problem for real people. Don't try to create action for yourself. I think that's where we started. And then as quickly as you can, put it out there. It's a real product from the minute you think of it, from my point of view. So don't do a lot of testing and I want it to be better. I want to have better, I don't know, icons there or whatever. I need to work on my test. No, put it out there. Let real people use it. There's a lot of people. They won't. Don't worry. You don't waste in user. They will come back.
I mean, Jack, how many users have you spoken to so far?
That would be around 23,000 people.
Wow, that's a lot, Jack.
Yeah, and when we started, I'm sure that the first 100 users probably didn't return to the app because, let's face it, it was version 1 and it was a little bit bad. But we learned a lot from it. And later on, we did find users that just stay with us. And I think it's a very interesting. We had a bug in one of the early versions. The lessons was built that it's supposed to end after a few sentences that you practice the student. So he will come back tomorrow. We had a bug that in some cases, it didn't end. It just never end. It just repeat. And it's an awful bug, but we found it on the database because there were users who were practicing for 15 minutes and more. And we didn't believe that someone will stay for 15 minutes and more, but we found that there are people who are actually doing that. So we have to think about them. And this is why in version 2, we didn't finish the lessons completely. You can actually ask to continue for that. And that stuff that you can only learn from real user, real mistakes, and real good data that you can read.
Awesome.
I mean, the idea was to give you bite-sized lessons. But what if you are really hungry today?
Or you're particularly advanced and you're ready for something more challenging. You know, exactly. There's lots of different ways that I could see that making a lot of sense for leveling the user to their current skill. Do either of you have an example of a bad voice experience that you've had recently?
Oh, yeah. So 2 days ago, I was sitting in the kitchen and I got a text message from my company who gave me these services that says that they have a new action on Google, and I immediately opened it up. So it connected to my account, on my mobile account, and it's supposed to have all of my data, how much I use, all the money I'm paying for them, everything. And every question I asked him, he just gave me, asked me to send me a link to my phone to see it on the website. And after 3 questions, my kids looked at me and said, are they serious? This is what they built? Because when I'm doing a voice interaction, I don't have my phone around me. If I had my phone, I would already open their app. The app is very good, by the way. But I did want to use only my voice. And this is like the wrong way to use this technology from my point of view.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't run into that issue, but I know that if you're in a voice experience, a lot of times it's because of the affordance that you don't have your phone or it's inaccessible or you're carrying groceries or something and you want to do it purely by voice. So if that's not voice first, then you've missed the kind of core concept in the design. Now, do you have an interesting or a good experience you've had recently, either one of you?
Well, have you played Medlib? I really like it. It's basically a game where you have to fill in a few words and then it builds a story out of these words. And sometimes it can be really funny, especially if you're hanging out with a few friends and everyone says different words and they are totally unrelated. You get really fun, sometimes inappropriate stories out of that. So I would definitely recommend to try it as an interesting approach for voice actions.
You have any recommendations for resources for people who want to learn more about design or things that you used while you were building?
The internet?
I think, first of all, learn from other action. So just go on the directory, start everything you can and just play with it and see how they react to you. And I usually like to go also on website. I love the 404 website when you getting to nowhere and how website react to that. So if you ever saw GitHub 404, it's a very nice page. And other pages just give you like the a very boring template. I think in voice interaction, the 404 is a very, very important stuff because we think that the computer will understand us completely, and it doesn't. It's going to be there. Eventually, machine learning will get us to have a full conversation with the computer. But right now, it's still learning. But we approach it because it's conversation. We already think that there is someone that will really understand us. And when it doesn't, I think that's the magic of a good app, a good action. Because if they know how to respond to our mistakes in and keep their persona in, so the persona really talk to you. So if that's a funny persona, I want it to be there even when I'm making the mistake and making sure that I'm coming back to the conversation gently without insulting me and saying, oh, I don't understand you. Yeah, I already figured out you don't understand me. But what do we do from here?
Learning by using is really good because you will feel the experience very quickly when things are going wrong and how well that's being handled. And those are often the easiest places to learn a lot from where things start to fall apart.
Yeah, another source, I will look for the link. There is a place that Googler published their action that they're creating. So it's people from Google that usually are not from the action team that creating stuff with the platform. And they really trying to push the limit over there. So the last action I saw over there is something that you have to create. It's giving you an instruction how to create some kind of a box with a lot of tools inside it. And it's a weather app that when you're asking a weather of someplace around the world, he will show you the weather in the box. So if it's rain over there, there will start to have rain inside that box. And if it's cloud, he will create cloud inside that box, a real cloud. And if it's sunny, you will have more light inside of it. So it's not that good for a daily basis, but you can see how they push the technology and use, I think there is Raspberry Pi over there to connect to the action and doing all this stuff together and to get something that is very cool. But when I look at stuff like that, I'm getting ideas of what I want to do, of a solution for problems that I have on my daily basis.
Yeah, I think the name of that was Oasis, and that was absolutely amazing.
I think I've heard of that as well. I'll try and find a link to that as well and post it in the show notes. All right, so finally, how can people learn more about you and your work?
I have a blog, Daniel has a blog, so feel free to check our blogs on Medium, follow us on Twitter, and meet us traveling around the world, I guess.
Yeah, that's the best place to meet.
All right, so thank you so much for joining me today. And if you haven't had a chance, go try out the Spanish lesson on Google Assistant and see how it works. All right, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Bye. Adios.
All of the show notes are available on designforvoice.com. And if you enjoyed the show, please rate it and subscribe with your favorite podcast player.